Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So he came down and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter, "He has gone to be the guest of a sinner." But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half my possessions to the poor. And if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is the son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save what was lost." The word of the Lord.
Some of you are like, "I have no idea what's going on." It's okay. And I'm very glad. Right? Hey, June. I'm going to start with a disclaimer and just say that Monica invited me to come and preach on Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus is somewhere I've been deeply dug in for the last 2 years. I have a book that's coming out on Zacchaeus. Please get it, because particularly because the proceeds are going to go to Indigenous Land Back initiatives. But Monica invited me because I had spoken at Banff this fall to a room of about 250 people. There were a couple of us who had like a TED Talk kind of a thing. And then after the TED Talk, you were supposed to go to discussion workshops with the three different presenters afterwards. So the 250 people dispersed, and Malcolm and Monica were the only ones who came to mine. So on that ringing endorsement, they debated for half of the time that we were together, which was also fantastic. So I'm just saying, just giving you a little warning ahead of time here. Zacchaeus is an interesting story for us to dig into. It's one that I think we have not understood well because we've mostly relegated it to kids' times, right? And we actually don't talk a lot about Zacchaeus as adults, but I would say actually Zacchaeus probably belongs in the adult times and not in the Sunday school time. But one of the problems with addressing something that is familiar, at least there's probably for some of us an old song running around in our heads as soon as, it's definitely going in Melody's head, as soon as we think of Zacchaeus. But when we're too familiar with something, it's hard for us to hear it afresh and kind of not assume that we know where this is going already. So let's address what things we already know about Zacchaeus and what we're not going to talk about. So what do we know about Zacchaeus? He's short. So said our text today. Interestingly enough, we don't know that. It is equally possible to translate that text that Jesus was short, and because he was short, Zacchaeus needed to get up in the tree in order to see him. That's increasingly a reading of this text. But does it matter whether it was Jesus or Zacchaeus who was short? No, not the point of the story. But the one thing that most of us know about the story, right? He's curious. Zacchaeus is curious. He's curious about Jesus, absolutely. And so he climbs up in that tree because he's curious, but he's also not too committed, right? He's not on the ground committed. He's up in the tree committed, right? Okay, good. What else do we know about Zacchaeus? He collected the taxes. And what we know about Zacchaeus particularly was that he was a chief tax collector, which meant he wasn't the guy on the street who like checked to see whether your load needed to be taxed or whether crossing that bridge needed to be taxed. He was next level up, and he made sure that those taxes got collected on the street properly, then dealt with. And his bosses would have been the Roman administrators, bureaucrats, right? So he's big shot in the tax collection realm. Anything else we know about the Zacchaeus story? He's wealthy. It did. It amassed some wealth for him. He had some resources, for sure. What do we usually, what have you, if you've ever heard a Zacchaeus story before, a sermon before, what is the point of the story often? For kids, have you guys had a Zacchaeus story recently? No? Not recently? Yeah? What do you think the point of the story of Zacchaeus is? Anybody want to take a guess? All right. I'll take the pressure off if you want to take the pressure off. But it looks like some of you have some ideas. Yes? Yep, being. Right. And so he goes out ahead. Yep, that's true. Could have been patience. Commonly we tell kids that Zacchaeus is about Jesus invited someone who was kind of an outsider. Zacchaeus wasn't best friends with anybody, right? And so Jesus includes the outsider. And that's often the point of the story we give with the Zacchaeus text. It is a point. It's a good point, but not the point of this particular story. And the reason I can say that with some confidence is because Jesus tells us what the point of the story is, right? So Jesus in verse 9 says, today salvation has come to this house. And I think that's meant to send us scrambling back into the text to figure out where did salvation come? When did that happen? What are we talking about? What does salvation even mean in this context? Okay? So on that point, we'll spend a little more time. What does salvation coming to this house mean to us? So salvation can mean a whole bunch of things. We most typically translate that to be having to do with what your eternal address is going to be, right? You're going to go to heaven when you die. That's often how we see that. But I don't think that's what Jesus is talking about here. Salvation also can be about whether or not he earned favor because of his actions, right? Did Zacchaeus earn favor with God? Did Zacchaeus secure his status in the kingdom because of his actions of repayment? No. Perhaps there's a sense that that's a sign of an outer working of an inner transformation that's happened for Zacchaeus, but that is not the point of this particular story. But salvation can speak to some other themes. What other themes does salvation speak to? Yeah, restoration of relationships in all kinds of different ways, right? So we can talk about that term could have been used for a doctor, right? Who saves someone, which means that their body is restored to health and they are restored to kind of living the life that they were living. It can also have to do with that ostracism that we talked about with Zacchaeus and that he is restored into relationships with those around him, right? Salvation can also speak to this larger restoration within the concept of shalom, which is the intention of God, that everything should be in right relation and there should be nothing missing and nothing broken, right? And so salvation is when what is missing is found, what is broken is mended and restored. So these senses of the word salvation seems to be what Jesus is speaking to. But what has happened? What has happened in the house that leads to this declaration by Jesus? So I want to invite us into a little bit of an imaginative exercise in the dining room of Zacchaeus' home to think about what might have gone on there. Before I started working on the Zacchaeus text, I think I imagined Jesus calls Zacchaeus down from the tree, and Zacchaeus scrambles home, knowing that Jesus is going to show up, ransacks his cupboards, you know, maybe finds a can of tuna in the back and cracks that out, and he and Jesus sit down to an intimate little lunch between the two of them, right? Just recognizing that in my head that it goes to some place simple like that, right? But actually, Zacchaeus was a wealthy man. Zacchaeus was not making dinner. Zacchaeus was asking his help to make dinner, right? That was being prepared. Jesus didn't come alone. Jesus came with his disciples and probably a good portion of the entourage who had been heading out on the path with him, right? So this is not a small, intimate conversation. This is a gathering of some significance. In that chaotic gathering, what has gone on? What has happened? Not his wealth, right? Not Zacchaeus' wealth. But his work actually kept Zacchaeus socially isolated. Zacchaeus would have hosted other groups. They wouldn't have been this particular mix of people. They probably would have been the times when the Romans came to collect money from him. And Zacchaeus is also very aware of the fact that that he is in the top 1% of his society, and that in fact 99% of the people in Palestine at this point in time are desperately poor. They are subsistence poor, right? So that wealth discrepancy is significant, but it's this role that Zacchaeus has taken on that really creates the social isolation that he's living inside of. It buys him some sense of security, though, right? Like, he's okay financially. He has made some decisions to do what he does, probably because of his concerns about what not taking this opportunity would mean. He is also a Jew, and he probably grew up, just like any other Jewish kid, learning Torah. There's evidence of that as we get along in the story a little bit. But he's not such an outsider, but he has been ostracized by his community. He's not allowed to participate in the temple, but he is a money guy, right? He's a numbers guy. And so he's probably someone who's paid attention to the numbers in the Bible. And that shows up when Zacchaeus stands up in the middle of the dining room and declares that he is going to set some restitution, that he is going to engage in reparations, a redistribution of resources, just like I saw happen over here with chocolate donuts. Well done on the chocolate donut redistribution. I know, the Timbits are also donuts, but they are particular kinds of donuts. Now I can't resist a little side comment. My father is not from Canada. He came and went to Tim Hortons. He asked for 24 donut holes. The person who was attending him does not speak English as a first language. My father speaks nothing but English. And he was given 24 whole donuts. Not wanting to raise a stink, he came home. He and I are the only ones who eat donuts. He came home with 24 whole donuts. Timbits, when my dad comes, I'll have you give him a lesson on the importance of the use of the word Timbits. Redistribution of resources. The redistribution of resources that Zacchaeus partakes in, right? What happens there? What do you remember? If you've still got your Bible open, when he stands up on the chair to say, hey, I am going to do what? Well done. Great memory there. Half of my money to the poor, and if I cheated anyone, four times that amount. So here's that numbers guy at work. Does Zacchaeus come up with this totally out of his own head? No. Though he does not follow any particular pattern from the Old Testament, that he is picking up on some patterns that are important there and kind of making his own mashup. But he's not making this up out of his own head. There's a recognition that is present in Jubilee teachings in Deuteronomy that say that the poor need to be part of the most significant consideration in redistribution of resources, that their concerns, their situation in life needs to be attended to, because the ways in which wealth inequity happens result in further oppression of the poor. So it is Zacchaeus picking up on that theme that he reflects on in his declaration of the half that will go to the poor. The four times to those he has cheated is very much an Old Testament pattern. So you've got fours and sevens, right? Numbers of completion, numbers of wholeness, this sense of full restoration that would happen. He's a numbers guy, and he uses those numbers in this setting of his intention to repair what was damaged through his own actions in the relationship. Now, imagine this busy courtyard, dining room, probably the whole house people are spilling over in. And Zacchaeus has had an encounter with Jesus that has been significant enough that he's gotten out of his hiding place in the tree and come home to be guest in his own house for dinner. There's something in the loving gaze of Jesus on Zacchaeus that inspires him to do these very unusual, unpredictable things in his own well-ordered, well-patterned life. There's been a disruption that's happened because of the loving gaze of Jesus and Jesus' invitation for Zacchaeus to come down out of the tree. Throughout the evening, I would imagine that Zacchaeus continues to experience the loving gaze of Jesus. And he's shoved into his own spaces with all of these characters whom he has collected taxes from very recently, whom he has been the heavy one who's come down and said, ah, you ignored the tax collector on the street, now I will confiscate your boat. He has been the heavy who has been interacting with all of these townspeople, but in his previous role, what impact did it have on Zacchaeus to be looked at with the love of Jesus and then to look at those he had harmed? Is it that tension of gaze that actually moves this conviction in him that results in action, that results in his calculating in a new way? This man who calculates for a living, who now is using his math in some old ways that he remembers from a child learning Torah patterns to reset the patterns and the relationships in fours. So before anyone left that night, it's possible that that Zacchaeus started this process of reparations. It's possible that he had stuff stored in a back room that he had confiscated from people, and he sent them home with that night. It's possible that in his staff were people who had a bond debt with him, who he restored to their families and sent them back into their communities that night. It is possible that all those things began to happen in that very evening. What do we do in the spaces where there is harm and hurt and need of repair, where there is much that is lost and much that is broken? Do we anticipate those spaces to be spaces that we dread? and avoid? Or are these spaces we might anticipate that there could be joy? That there could be actually quite a large party atmosphere that breaks out as this begins to happen in the house that evening? That party probably goes on longer than they thought it was going to go on and spills out even beyond Zacchaeus' household. Can we consider the joy and the celebration that might be a part of journeys of repair and reparation? Can we consider what it is like for us to receive the loving gaze of Jesus in a way that brings about a transformation in us, whereby it could be said, salvation, the restoration of all that is missing and broken, has happened, has come in this place, in this time. Friends, we, like Zacchaeus, live in really uncertain times. Again, Zacchaeus, I think, made the decision to follow the career path he did because of a desire for security, a desire to make sure that he was taking care of business, right? We too live in uncertain times, and there's a temptation to hunker down and to secure what we can for ourselves, to protect our own interests. But what does the loving gaze of Jesus do when we then look at our neighbors in light of how we are seen by Jesus? Like Zacchaeus, are we being invited to come down out of our own trees of control and a little bit of remove and maybe even protection? And to sit as a guest at the table that we thought was ours and to receive bread that is not kept and preserved and held for the appropriate day, but is blessed and broken and given. To receive a cup that is not about our protected safety guards, what makes us in or out, but is actually poured out and shared in love for all, for the protection of all, rather than the protection of some. Friends, tables can be transformative places. And as we come to this table, I invite you to consider the invitation that happens in the loving gaze of Jesus as you come and are fed and are sent to feed.